Hey everybody, this is Chris and welcome to the Bonner Breakdown. This is the Good Report. You know, Bonner Breakdown is sponsored by Bonner Community Housing Agency. I'm the executive director there. I've got a great staff, great team. We've done great things over the years. And we are in a place right now where we are opening transitional housing for homeless people in a house that has four apartments in it with some communal dining, kitchen, and living room space. What we're asking for, and this is why I think it's the Good Report, is because we have an opportunity to receive from corporate sponsors from all over the state 100% matching grant dollars for every penny that we raise for this transitional housing project. We are already in motion on that. We realize that, man, there is a lot of services that need to be provided that we don't necessarily have the funding for. And so we want to be able to fully fund when we need to provide additional help to the clients that are coming into our service program. So we're asking that you donate minimum $25. You know what? You can go to bonnerhousing.org and you can look at Avenues for Hope, where we have matching grant dollars available there. Minimum donation for the matching grant is $25. We ask that you just join in with us on that journey. And with that, we're really excited to be able to help people in partnering with Kiniksu Health Services get the mental health care, personal health care, transportation, form assistance, legal assistance, all of the things that they need to go from being homeless and being stuck in some negative credit situations, negative home life situations, places where they found themselves homeless for whatever the reason is. We want to be able to support them and help them get on the path to permanent housing. So we ask that you come help us in this project. You can go to bonnerhousing.org, click on Avenues for Hope, and you can sponsor us there. And of course, share it out on the social media. So at Bonner Housing ID. With that, we've got a great episode today. I'm so excited to finally, this is one of the first people I really wanted to sit down and talk with. Back in November, when the levy information on the continuation of the levy language was on the ballot, this is Tom Albertson, the superintendent of schools at Lake Pontarre School District. He was principal for a few years while my son and daughter were at the high school. So I've known Tom for a few years. We're going to have a great conversation today. We hope that you enjoy it. And don't forget to like the video or the podcast, share it. Make sure you subscribe, like, hit the bells, do all of that stuff. The more you get this information out, the more we grow and the better content we're able to give you week in and week out. So here is the interview with Tom Albertson. Hey, Tom, it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on. Right. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. And, you know, I've spent some time in your office. My son graduated in 2017.
Correct.
Had a couple sit downs with you and Cindy, which was great. We really enjoyed that and getting to know you guys a little bit in the process. Some that was some hard times.
Yeah.
When we were spending time together, it was in some not so good situations. And
right.
We can talk kind of about the state of affairs there at the school district. But I want to start out and just get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah.
So you are a long-term Sandpoint person. You've been here, is it your whole life?
Yeah.
Pretty
so I was,
much,
I was
yeah.
born at Bonner General Hospital, 1964.
Okay, so that's
so,
just the,
yeah,
wow.
So my whole 55, almost 56 years have
wow.
been in Bonner County.
That's awesome.
Outside leaving the community to go to college and,
right.
for a short stint, but very
yeah.
fortunate to be able to come back.
And, great.
And my family actually came around 1916.
Okay.
So about 103 years now we've been in the community. So, yeah, very long standing.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So you've witnessed all the change.
I have.
So you know,
yeah.
from the 1960s
right.
to now, this is a huge
right.
difference. I mean, a huge difference. So when you look back, what are some of the big milestone markers in Sandpoint history from your perspective?
Yeah, I say several times, Sandpoint has been discovered again. because throughout my life, I've just known, I remember as a kid, even in the early 1970s, late 1960s, and we live on a family ranch, so, you know, out on Gold Creek, and I remember at that point in time, there were like maybe four or five families that lived above us. I could name them. They were the Woods, the Coons, the Fitchetts, the Kellys. I mean, there were just that many people, and everybody knew everybody. And I remember all of a sudden there were some school buses with smokestacks, with chimneys going up the road, you know. And so it was, again, it was discovered in the early 1970s where people were just going to get away.
Getting away. The war was on and people wanted to get out of.
Yeah. So I say when people want to get away, and then you fast forward to 2019, and I have to chuckle because Idaho is one of the fastest growing states, and people are trying to get away, which is very similar to what I experienced as a young child, you know, in the early 70s.
So where'd you go to college?
University of Idaho.
Okay, great. Yeah. So you are Idaho through and through.
I am Idaho through and through.
Okay, so we know not to root for the Cougs around you. Okay.
Yeah.
When you finally moved back, did you go right into teaching or were you doing?
I did. My dad was an educator.
Okay.
He taught biology for 32 years after he got out of the military. Obviously, as most teenagers, I'm not going to be a teacher.
Of course not.
You're not going to do what your parents did.
Yeah.
So as I went to University of Idaho, I was fairly proficient in math. Math was always an easy subject for me, something I liked, and I was going to be an engineer.
Okay.
And being raised on a farm, I was going to be an agricultural engineer.
Okay.
And then I started saying, well, I don't even know what an agriculture engineer does or where they're going to work. And then when you start looking at Omaha, Nebraska, and Minneapolis and Houston,
you're going, I was going to say Texas,
I don't know that I want to go there.
Yeah.
So at that time, computer science was just starting to hit the, I guess, the universities and saying, where are we going in this new age of technology?
Uh-huh.
And so after a semester of programming in the basement and not having much interaction with people, I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, I had all these math credits and the influence of my dad. I had an aunt that was a school teacher, another great aunt who was a college professor, that it was like, I'll get my degree in education.
Yeah,
and,
that's cool.
That's kind of how it started.
That's cool. That's awesome.
I mean, and back when I was programming, you were doing punch cards, and you would carry them up to the mainframe and put them in, and everything I learned in my, I have a minor in computer science, is so obsolete today that it really doesn't pertain.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's a joke between Cindy and I, because anytime there's a technology problem at home, I always say, I got a minor in computer science. Let me take care of that. And she's like going,
pass. We'll just pass. Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, and things are moving so rapidly.
They are.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You know, we just, for Christmas, we did one of those Black Friday deals, and I got a new flat screen TV for the living room.
Nice.
And it's a Amazon Fire TVs installed on it. And I'm like, okay, all right. Everything before, you know, we had the smart DVD player an older TV.
Right.
So now it's like, you know, it's just everything is so simple, and try and fix it, I would have no clue.
Right. Right.
Like, well, I think a lot of things have moved disposable because of the how increased the technology is. So you move, you get your teaching certificate degree, right? You come back here. When did you meet Cindy?
Not until about 2002.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
great. That's
so
great.
We'll be married 17 years coming
up. That's awesome.
Up. And between Cindy and I, we have two sons and six grandkids.
That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
And she was an elementary teacher and a counselor. And
cool.
Her previous husband had died of cancer. And so it was that kind of a point where we had been in the same proximity for years, but had never met. So,
wow. Yeah. That's neat. That's neat. So 17 years. That's awesome. And so you start teaching here in Sandpoint. What was kind of your, where were you teaching when you started? Were you at the high school or were you?
The very first year, I kind of had a non-traditional path.
Okay.
I did my student teaching in a program down at University of Idaho called Upward Bound.
Okay.
And it was a summer school program, and mainly for students that needed to recover credits, kind of an alternative school setting.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, most of the students that I had were of Native American descent and came from Lapway, from the Nez Perce tribe.
Okay.
And I have to give that just a lot of shout out, because I learned how to deal with kids.
Wow.
You know, as far the traditional things you learn as a teacher of how to do lesson plans and how to, you know, probably may have had a little richer experience. Mm-hmm. But as far as the important part of building relationships with students and learning about students, it wasn't just in the classroom, but it was weekend field trips. And it was, you know, whether we were rafting on the Selway River, whether we were taking a field trip to Lake Wallawa, it just really, learned how to deal with kids.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Build that trust level. And it was tough because they were like going, who are you? And why are you in my life right
Seriously,
now?
Seriously, yeah.
But but then at that point in time, my first year of teaching was at actually Sandpoint Middle School. And it was we used the current middle school as a high school and a middle school. It was a double shift year. And so I was teaching 7th and 8th grade science from probably 12:30 in the afternoon till 5:30.
Wow.
So,
That's wild.
It was a crazy first year.
Yeah.
And then the next year after that, I went to the high school teaching math.
Okay.
And taught math for 22 years.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. And then I know that you moved into, after 22 years of teaching, you went into the administrative side.
Right.
And what was that transition like for you, going from being the kind of a hands-on teacher into moving more administratively? You know, as far as that, those role shifts, I know that can be, you know, it's a good, shift for some people, and other people it's really hard.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you?
You miss the relationships you built with the students, and that's one of the biggest parts. And then, for that brief moment, whether it be 60 minutes or 90 minutes, you can build that community of learners within those four walls.
Right.
And when you move into administration, those walls just got a lot bigger. And so
that's
the way I describe it is that it's just you don't have that intimate time as much. And but again, you got to remember that everything you do still goes back to that what's happening and what are the experiences for the students in the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even in administration, you're supporting teaching staff. And so my philosophy is how I wanted to treat my students in the classroom and provide that safe community and to guide them. I would treat the staff and the adults the same way.
Right.
So really sometimes we think everybody's different, and the more we think about that, the more they're the same.
Right. So, yeah. Well, that's a great way to put it, because, you know, I'm a book junkie. I read all types of things on leadership and all types of stuff. So, you know, one of the things that's interesting is people don't change.
No.
I mean, they change. Obviously, you can change. Anybody can change. But the way people operate, we're all geared and wired so similarly.
Right.
You know, and you know, people who are geared more artistically are going to be, you have to communicate differently than people who are wired as engineers. Mm-hmm. You know, and they see the world differently. They see every situation differently, you know? So, you know, but it's good, 'cause we're all people.
I used to see that firsthand with geometry students. Algebra was a little more sequential and a little more abstract. And in geometry, you'd get the parts about the shapes and the artistic part of that.
Okay.
And there would be certain units that students that maybe traditionally thought they weren't really good at math were saying, oh, this is easy, I get this.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean,
because there's a visual side to it. That's so great.
Absolutely. What side of the brain is functioning a little higher. So,
Well, and there's so much value for not only knowing yourself well enough to know what kind of, where you kind of fit on the spectrum, but then having teachers that can see that.
Right.
And then maybe go, okay, well, that's not going to work for you, but maybe we can come at this from a different angle. Mm-hmm. What's the training like? How has training changed since you started teaching versus how teachers are trained today? What's the kind of some of the differences that you see?
I think back when I was in the College of Education, it was really a focus on content.
Uh-huh.
And I think the pedagogy and the delivery, I think brain development, just about the whole child. Mm-hmm. I think you see teachers now in College of Education's understand that it's just as equally important about the delivery of the material and right. understanding how students learn, not just about how well-versed you are in your content. So the yeah. idea of a classroom of the old sit and get, I'm the expert, mm-hmm. Take notes, and then let me know how well you can got my note. What I, yeah, yeah, really. Yeah, I think yeah. those days you see are way down the road, uh-huh. and that students having more of a voice and a choice in their education, uh-huh. and a chance for them to communicate with mm-hmm. each other, and then you know, gain that information in a different way. How can you show me?
Sure.
Instead of just on paper and pencil,
right.
can you tell me, right. looking at different ways people learn?
Well, it's interesting. There's, you know, when you talk about music, learning music, there's the classical style of learning by rote, mm-hmm. where the instructor says, this finger here, and this is the progression, ding, ding, ding.
Right.
And you might learn that, but you don't know how to read the music.
Right.
Right. So, you know, being able to come at like, that's great. Like, that's yeah. how I learned how to play piano was by rote.
Right.
And now I learned to play guitar by ear.
Right.
Right. Like, just because I you know, just am trying to figure it out. And so I actually have to learn how to read. So it's very different, two different things. I can't play a lick of piano now. Right. Because I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I can do a lot of other stuff. But
yeah.
It's
yeah.
funny. Learning styles are very interesting. And do you feel like... with the learning styles and kind of the way that the teaching styles have changed, do you feel like we're educating critical thinkers, people who are really, you know, looking at issues from different perspectives versus this is just the way that it is? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, the idea of education is to not just give the skills, but also the application.
Correct.
But then
yeah.
also,
yeah.
Young people are still trying to figure out who they are.
Right.
I mean, so for a long time, it would always ask, what are you going to be when you grow up? Instead of asking that, it's like, who are you? Who are you as a, and I used to talk to students all the time when I was in administration, who are you as a son or daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you as a brother or sister?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you as a student in this classroom? I mean, so, and,
yeah.
and if you want to stop a teenager in their tracks, ask them who they are. Because they're just like going, I never thought of that.
Yep.
And so, yep. so in that sense, you know, who are you going to be contributing to society and your chosen profession
wow. yeah.
might just be, this is what I do to mm-hmm. contribute to society
right.
instead of this is my job and my profession and identify them,
right.
identify as a person
mm-hmm. yeah.
doing this skill that's bettering society.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a more holistic way of
sure.
thinking about it.
Yeah.
And the more we can get kids to think about that, I think we're better off.
Great. Yeah. And I think also when you ask who you are, you're asking about character.
Right.
And character development.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you're not a good son,
yeah.
and you may have horrible parents, but that
right.
you could also be a good son or a good daughter.
Absolutely.
Or a bad son or a bad daughter.
Right. Right.
Those are lessons I've had to learn
sure.
over the years. I didn't even figure that sure. out until my late 30s.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know how to be a good son. Like, what
yeah.
does that look like?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, those are great questions. Those are great questions. Well, and I think that the ability to think,
mm-hmm.
One of my favorite classes, in high school was problem solving.
Mm.
And it was a math class.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I wasn't a big fan of math. I can do
sure.
math, but
sure.
I enjoyed the figuring things out because I felt like, oh, I know how to think now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can look at things from, instead of just a binary, maybe there's a different answer that I haven't even thought of yet.
Right.
Like, oh, I have to use my imagination to come up with a solution. So that was one of my favorite classes in high school. It was good. So when you look at, the school district, we get some kudos mm-hmm. around Sandpoint for our education system.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about some of the kudos. What are some of the things people are saying about Sandpoint Public Schools?
Well, to me, there's the top two things that make a singular student successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to pat yourself on the back. But I heard a saying the other day is sometimes We receive students who are on third base and take credit for the triple. And so I'm going to go back to the point that every student who is successful has some supportive parents, guardians, or coming from a background where somebody is in their court and somebody is helping guide them in life. And then the second most important thing will be that interaction that they have with the adult, and can that adult create that relationship with that student that's inspiring them in the classroom. And those two pieces there, I mean, I'm a math guy. Okay, so I could say, my gosh, we've had really high math scores because of the math teachers, and everybody can do Pythagorean's theorem, and we can, you know, factor these polynomials well. But really, it's students who are coming from a supportive home life. And we know in today's life that can look so different.
So different.
You know, the traditional home life may not be there. That's okay. Yeah. But do you have that support? And then, you know, that we talk a lot about relationships in the classroom with instructors and their students. Are you building that community of learners? Mm. And to me, that's so important. And, you know, I even have staff when I was a principal go, I know, Tom, we're going to talk about relationships. And I say, absolutely, we're going to talk about relationships. Because if you don't have the relationships, the math, the content, you know, the five-paragraph essay really doesn't have any meaning. So it's that inspiration. So I would say what makes us successful is we've really focused on that. And then, you know, I also think there's a model called DeFore's model, husband and wife team in education. And they simplify it into professional learning communities. And we really focus, and we have for the last 2 or 3 years, on four critical questions. It really simplifies it. Question number one is, what do we want students to learn? Mm-hmm. So we better have that down.
Yeah.
And I don't mean whether if you're in third grade at Southside, you're going to learn something different than a third grade at Northside or third grade at Farmers Sidwell. We need to have a solid curriculum down, and so we need to know what we're teaching. And then how do we know students have learned it? Mm-hmm. That's number two. How are we assessing students? Not over-assessing them, but how are we assessing them to make sure that they've met those skills? Three, what are we going to do if they haven't learned it?
Yeah.
Not just move on and say, okay, these students got it and we feel really good because we have these top students, but how do we go back and support the students that didn't understand it the first time? Mm. And then at the same time, question number four is, what do we do with students who do get it the first time? Don't hold them back.
Right.
So I know it sounds real simple, but those four guiding questions have a lot of layers underneath them, but it's brought some real continuity to all schools.
That's
and
great.
All teachers.
So, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. What's kind of the fruit you're seeing of that?
Consistent instruction and increased test scores, not just for your top students, but for your middle of the road students.
Good.
And also bringing the bottom
up. Good. That's great.
So, you know, when you talk about question number three, what do you do when a student doesn't get it? You know, it's education jargon is called MTSS, multi-tiered support system. And within that, how are we going to support those students? How do we give them some more individual attention, small groups? It's complicated.
Yeah.
And when you see a teacher in the classroom masterfully working with that, it's like a three-ring circus. They've got some whole group going, and then they got a small group going over here to support them. And at the same time, they've got some of the early adopters that are ready for a challenge, not sitting there being bored, but getting them some
great.
Enrichment. So my hat's off to the teacher that's in the classroom, because it's fun to watch.
That's awesome.
And they're very dedicated.
Yeah, that's super cool. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think that the concept of education, you know, has shifted a little bit from, like you said, sit and get.
Right.
To creating an environment for learning. Mm-hmm. And I think when you talk about like the multi-tier support systems, you talk about the different ways that teachers and those who are coming alongside the student, whether it's at home or in the community, having structures that are really healthy and supportive probably has some characteristics that I think are probably really important. What are those characteristics that make a healthy support structure for a student? What are the things that you really go, man, we've got to have these things in place for a student who's struggling to be healthy?
Right. Well, you know, and I am a firm believer in parental rights. And so I never want to say, okay, here's the magic answer, because it can look different in different ways.
Yeah, but every parent's different.
Students and kids like boundaries. They're going to tell you they don't, but they like boundaries and they feel comfortable within that boundaries. So, you know, one of the big things in today's world is screen time. You know, we've moved into, yes, we've got Chromebooks, and yes, everybody's got a smartphone and everybody's got their nose into their screen. But at some point in time is when are you know, screens down, phones off, just that time to have some interaction like we're having here. So just building that time in. Also, somebody just to make sure that you're going to get your homework done, setting a little bit of time aside and balancing that. Are you getting rest? I mean, just somebody that cares. Yeah. Do you have a hot meal? I mean, just, I'm talking basics.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I do think screen time is huge.
Right.
Huge. I saw it with my kids, I think, and I, you know, we have a 7-year-old. And screen time's a huge issue for her.
Yeah.
And it can, you know, at her age level, it's a bit of a meltdown, struggle, emotional struggle for her to not get as much screen time as she wants.
Right.
So as parents, you know, we've got to navigate that in a way that hopefully is in a healthy manner. But it's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that we do face in our current culture more, I would say more... what's the right word? Not aggressive, but not distinct, but more, the challenges are, more acute. Mm-hmm. Before it was like they were kind of, you know, ominous, like they're out there. The challenges are big, but they're not in your face.
Right.
They're not, but the challenges right now are in kind of culturally are in the kids' faces right here, right now, from social media, bullying, you know, on that side.
Yeah.
You know, you deal with, okay, I don't want to be alone with my thoughts, so I will stay up till 3 a.m. binging Netflix on my phone.
Right. Right.
And then I show up and I can't stay awake in class.
Right.
I'm getting more depressed. I feel more alone. I can't, you know, and so like just one choice in that thing can set off a whole firestorm for a young kid who doesn't know, doesn't have an understanding of what's happening.
Right.
So challenges are just acute and they're big and they're kind of in your face right now.
You know, one quick thing, and I know many families do this, in my, stepson and his family, phones aren't allowed in the room. They got a charging station that's downstairs in the kitchen.
We did that with our kids.
This amount of time, that's where the charging station is. And those are boundaries that are great. I mean, you know, and like I say, some kids say, I don't want to, that's dumb. No, but that's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
And they really come to appreciate that.
Yeah. When we go to bed, we hit the power button, all the Wi-Fi's off.
Yeah.
Like everything's down. You know, obviously with a phone, you can get on, you know, now that we got 5G up here, you know, it's moving quickly. Well, good. Let's shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying the conversation, and it's really good to kind of see, you know, your priorities and kind of things that are really important to you. When you took over as the superintendent of schools for Lake Ponderay School District, what did you see as being kind of your role? What do you see your role as superintendent as?
Yeah. First of all, support the work that's happening in the classroom. And there's so many things when you start talking about funding and politics and everything else that can drive that focus away.
That's right.
And I do have to give kudos that we have a director of teaching and learning, Andrew Murray, who is awesome at that. So I really lean heavy on her. But none of the rest of it matters if it's not happening in the classroom. And so supporting the teachers and making sure that we're focused on those four questions is really the most important thing.
Yeah.
You know, from there, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, it depends on how you look at it, my job is multi, I guess, faceted, to be working with the school board, mm-hmm. To make sure that we secure funding, mm-hmm. And working with our senators and representatives in Boise to, again, advocate for adequate funding for mm-hmm. education. And mm-hmm. Obviously that can be a controversial topic, because of that word yep. adequate. You could bring 10 people in and they're going to have a different opinion.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So explain to us the history of school funding.
Yeah.
So, cause it used to be, from what I've understood, that the funding for schools was actually, you know, it was not based as much on federal and state. It was more local.
Correct. I'm going to go back not too far in history, yeah, but prior to 2007, uh-huh. it was a non-voter approved property tax at the rate of $300 per $100,000. Okay. And everyone was assessed that property. It was called equalization. And at that point in time, that is how schools mainly were funded. And okay. at that point in time, people,
which is local,
it was right. It was generated locally, yeah. But it was then, you know, delivered. Some was delivered to Boise. Mm-hmm. It didn't all stay right here,
right?
But, and at that point in time, the idea was to let's give some property tax relief,
right?
And let's shift funding. So we went to a 1 cent increase in sales tax, and that was supposed to, I guess, replace that more than enough.
Mm-hmm. And that was a statewide sales tax.
Statewide sales tax, yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
And as you have rewind, that didn't happen, didn't generate the funds. I mean, you couldn't control things such as recessions. Uh-huh. I mean, there's so many factors there.
Well, and you got a lot of hands in the kitty.
That. Yeah,
you
know? Right, yep. Right. So that's kind of the historical part. So in addition to what the state then would allocate, there was always the local option for what we call a maintenance and operation levy. Mm-hmm. So that could say in your community, you could choose if you wanted to supplement what the state's funding was to locally to make your education what you want to as a community.
Right. Talking about 2007, there was a change there in order for there to be adequate funding.
Right.
And there's some variables there, some difference of opinion, right. What's adequate.
Right.
So what were you?
Yeah. Saying? So, you know, as the maintenance and operation levy, as we know in this community, has continued to grow. And I think, it kind of based on what do you want for services. Mm-hmm. And this just isn't about education. The bottom line is that as a community, you have to decide what services do you want and how do you want to pay for them.
Yep.
And the more services you are requesting and asking for, the more it's going to cost you. And really there's right now three ways to fund things: property tax, sales tax, or an income tax. You know, and so when yep. you look at things statewide, that's kind of where we are. So, you know, I'm very empathetic to watching property taxes and understanding yep. the impact it can have on a local community. And that's one reason, you know, we had the ask in November, November 5th, for the community to say, well, do you want, instead of every 2 years of voting on a maintenance and operation levy, which has been continuing to mm-hmm. increase every 2 years.
It does. Yeah.
Can we just make that continuous? Mm-hmm. And my intent would be to stay at that flat dollar amount for as many years as possible. And people yep. would want to say, okay, so you're never going to come back. And I would never want to say never.
That's but again, an impossible ask.
It is yeah. as cost of yep. living goes up, yep. you never know. And the community may say, hey, mm-hmm. we want this. Uh-huh. How are we going to fund it?
Yeah.
But the idea is to kind of, I look at that as a relief on property tax in a sense. Let's live on okay. this flat amount.
Yep.
And I know there's some other housing issues as we started at the beginning of this yeah. conversation is yeah. that people's assessed values have really increased. And that'll go back to it, that conversation wild. Of Sandpoint has been discovered again. You know, in the 1970s, yeah. It was people getting away from it, coming up in those buses with the smokestacks. And now they're coming and, in my opinion, are paying a lot of money for property and houses that weren't worth that much even 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're in a conundrum, and I appreciate your comment at the beginning of this, of when you were telling me about all the people together around a table and communication.
Right.
So this is not a school issue. This is not a county issue.
Right.
This is not a city issue.
Across the board.
It's everybody's issue.
Yeah.
So we need to look at that. And so, you know, my commitment is to try to balance that, turn the conversation to the state level, and let's talk about funding education at the state level.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of lay out some thoughts on this, because I just pay attention to what's being said.
Sure.
Right. And you get to hear a lot if you just listen. It's pretty amazing what you hear.
Yes. Yes.
Pre 2007, before voters could vote on a levy, it was $300 per 100,000.
Correct.
So since 2007, now 12 years later, we've had multiple maintenance and operation levies.
Right.
They're paying less than when they were in 2007, right?
Currently, it's
$60.
It's $214.
$214. Okay,
right.
So $86 difference.
Yeah,
per 100,000.
And one way to look at that too is if we continue to be discovered, and there's more people moving here, and more parcels being purchased, that will even continue to go down, because what you're doing is taking that flat dollar amount
and
spreading it out by more properties and more people.
Right.
So
the more we grow, the lower that amount goes. Okay.
Correct.
So in March is when we voted for the levy.
Correct.
Okay. And that passed.
Correct.
And that was $214 per 100,000.
Approximately.
At that just point at the, yeah, just yes. roughly that.
Yeah.
Now here in November, there was the, on the ballot was to just maintain that over time. And there wasn't a time limit attached to that.
Right.
Correct. So it's just into perpetuity.
I called it continuous.
Until something changes, it's just going to continue to be $214 per 100,000 based on that time period. Right.
It'll correct that. Sure. It would be $12,700,000.
Okay. However, that breaks out per 100,000.
Because that could be less than 214.
Well,
or it could be more. It just depends. But the one thing that's constant is that $12,700,000 cannot change without voter approval.
So my house, in the past 9 years has doubled in value. Doubled.
And that only does you good if you're going to sell it, right? Or you want to loan
it. Right. And, but the difference, of course, is in how much I pay in taxes, right? So my value's increasing.
Right.
That means my overall taxes are increasing. Right. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Math. You do the math.
Right.
If values are increasing, isn't the amount people are paying on the levy decreasing?
Correct.
Right.
Each
property, the more their value goes up, the less of it goes to the levy because it's being spread out over these higher values.
That is correct. From here forward.
Okay. That was one of the conversations I never heard.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm doing the math.
Yeah.
You know, it's a flat amount.
It is flat amount.
And if it's a flat amount, that's going to, you know, be different depending on everybody's value.
And again, I've been in this community my whole life. I'm very community oriented, and you won't hear me pit one organization versus another because I see the better of the whole.
Yeah.
But schools are the only taxing organization that cannot increase their levy by a percentage each year. You know, the county, if they see, can increase it by 3%. The library district, the fire districts,
schools
everybody
cannot.
Can increase by 3%. School districts can't.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just the way it is. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I, what's important for me is for people just to understand that and not operate out of fear. Mm-hmm. And I also value people's opinions, whether they agree or disagree.
Right.
I always ask, it's just, you know, let's keep the discussion civil. And if we can agree to disagree, okay.
Yep. And that can be a challenge.
It can be.
It can be a challenge. I one of the things that I appreciate is being able to have the conversation, because one of the things that really struck me this last round, this last vote.
On the November 5th.
On the November 5th vote.
Right.
Was how many people did not have a clear understanding of what was being voted on. Mm. And just from the feedback I was looking at, you know, just watching and, right. and listening to, you know, even, you know, with you presenting and the questions that people would ask, I'd be like, wait, he just answered, like, there's, like, how are we, what are we missing here?
Sometimes people might not want to know, too.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know.
I think so.
Because, you know, it was important to me to get out in his front. I took every invite that I could to be out in front of a
Yeah, I'm
a
sorry you didn't get on here during that time. We just were busy. It's, but glad to have you on now.
And just wanted people to completely understand what they were voting on, to know that.
So then article runs November 29th in the newspaper saying, hey, the verbiage on this levy thing was wrong, or it wasn't quite right. And I know it went through the process of going through, you know, the state tax commission. And is it, where's that sit at this point?
Yeah. You know, what I can say is the ballot language was written in good faith, tried to communicate as clearly to all citizens that wanted to hear what to make it clear on what they were voting on.
Yeah.
And so at this point in time, but any election has a time period that can be challenged, and we're still within that time period.
Okay. So, but to your knowledge, has it been challenged yet?
As of today, sitting here on the 17th at
1:45,
it has not been challenged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't well, mean it that seemed it
like,
won't be.
It seemed like the response from the tax commission was like, like
so you got the Secretary of State, you got the Attorney General, and you got the Tax Commission, and they all gave the county permission to certify that after the date where it could be contested. And you know, any election can be contested up to 20 days, and then other elections that are dealing with bonds and levies could be contested for any reason for 40 days.
Okay.
So
a right, couple mean, more that, days that, left.
Yeah.
So interesting, because, you know, for me, the thing that I thought was interesting about the ballot language issue, is it seemed like they wanted to put in, they wanted you to list the dollar amount in the ballot language. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that what was
missing? 100,000, but it didn't really fit this election.
Because it, well, you were not asking,
not asking
for
an increase,
actual money.
Not asking for money. It was just language, not asking for an increase. And also, it doesn't take place till 2021.
Well, I should take back that you weren't asking for money.
We're asking for money.
Yeah.
The continuation of what was already there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting now is we'll see what happens with that.
What happens.
And there's nothing we can do. But what do you think is the biggest need in the school district right now? What do you see as kind of being the big need?
Well, there's multiple things. I would really like to see the state legislators work on, and I'm going to really say, I like the language that Governor Little's come in with, but, voluntary, all day kindergarten funding. I believe in parents' rights that if they don't want their young children to go to school, or they want to choose to go to a different school.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, or if they can do it at home, great.
Yep.
I mean, I really truly believe that. Yep. I just believe in education in any form for the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
But to give that a choice and not just be half day, because when we're also talking about accountability on early childhood literacy and maybe being, you know, measuring students' success on their third grade reading level, and you've got students coming in that are not prepared, that maybe go back, just haven't had the opportunity, the support, reason, that's close to my heart, that I hope that kind of comes back into this legislative session. One of the questions, and this is right down your alley on housing, mm-hmm. is recruit and retain high quality staff. And like it or not, it's expensive to find housing in our community. Crazy. So when we hire a teacher, mm-hmm. one of the first questions before they accept the job is, can I find housing? And so when we talk about housing for the workforce, mm-hmm. that's an issue. Mm-hmm. And then trying to have our wages be competitive, being mindful of the taxpayers at the same time, not having wages like they are in the state of Washington, but what are comparing to the Lakeland School District, the Coeur d'Alene School District, for us to be able to recruit and retain high quality teachers. You know, we have to have a competitive wage within reason. Mm. And that's, you know,
of course.
One thing. And then for them to be able to make a wage enough to be able to afford housing. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of that conundrum. You're there. Mm-hmm.
What's the turnover rate for new?
You know, since we've had support from the community on the maintenance and operation, it has been going down. The good news is that one of the goals of the school district of retaining staff is good. I think it doesn't seem like it, but we usually are hiring between 25 to 28 new teachers a year.
Okay.
And we just did going back and looking at the data, and after 3 years, I think we're retaining, I think one data point I saw was out of 28, I think we still had 24.
Wow.
So that was good.
That's great.
That is good.
Good. Yeah. Well, and the stability with the maintenance and operations levy allows people to kind of breathe a little bit, to not feel like they're going to get their funding cut.
Right.
If they, you know.
Yeah. And another thing I'd throw out there is that our community time and time has really been vocal about our rural community schools.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, 3,840 students in the district. Mm-hmm. If we had the buildings or a different model, having larger but fewer elementary schools would be more cost effective.
Right.
But we are spread out geographically. We really are. And mm-hmm. so people take pride in their Southside and the Clark Fork and the Hope. And and I'm all in support of keeping those community schools, but then it is expensive to keep them open.
Yeah. Okay.
So
do you just on the housing issue, we know, so you have great retention with teachers who've been here for a fair amount of time that are locked in. They own a home here.
Right.
They're here and they're not going anywhere. There's, you know, they seem like they're very steady employees, right? Mm-hmm. They're staff that you can count on, and they're going to be here. When we did the housing survey, we found for those, when we ran it through the school district, this was last 6 months ago, about 6 months ago. So, you know, we found that a lot of people that were, you know, happy and working and that, you know, and they're already owned a home. Mm-hmm. And that there was also a big gap with people who didn't know what they were going to be doing. So you either have a huge stable community and then this really unstable as far as like, oh, what are we going to do with housing? When you look at the school district and you look at workforce housing, what are some, obviously you talk about wages, but is there anything else in the community, any solutions you can think of that would be helpful for, you know, incoming teachers that you're bringing in or that you're trying to retain? Is there anything, any other options you can think of other than just higher wages?
Yeah, that's a big conversation because, you know, even at the city level, county level, what does affordable housing look like? You know, I know planning and zoning stock, you know, even talking about hot topics like how many mobile homes you can have on one lot to try to deal with that, know, and then is it apartments and then rent and
how high can the apartments go?
How high can the apartments go? You know, I'm protective of our community in the sense that maybe Jackson Hole, Wyoming and Sun Valley are great places to go visit, but really I don't think it serves any of us good to become them, where it's service oriented and you can't really afford to live in your community. You might work there, but you have to commute.
One of the biggest challenges of this issue, and I think the education really is going to be hit by this is the people who are moving here are predominantly retirees.
Right.
You know, and they're the ones with the money spending the larger amounts because they're coming from places where they had a 2-bedroom condo in San Francisco for $1.8 million. Right. And they're like, oh, I can get this amazing property for half the price. Right. So, you know, I think it's an interesting, interesting spot that we're in with that.
And I think also with that, that lands on my job to educate them, and have trust in me that, you know, I am watching, property taxes and that, you know, we can only tap into our local, you know, resource there so much and to have that open dialogue and when do we need to, like I say, let's cap it and live within this means and change the conversation somewhere else.
Well, and I thought that was really an act of good faith.
Yeah.
To me, from just, you know, the perspective looking at the issue with the levy going, okay, we've got a fixed dollar amount. And he's saying, you know, to me, what I was hearing was, I'm going to try and make everything work under this number as long as I can.
Right.
And we will do what we can to make sure. The school board feels
the same way.
Okay.
I mean, so I've had that conversation with the school board.
Which is way better than, okay, well, in 2 years, we're going to come back, ask for double.
And we're probably going to have to ask more. We're going to have to ask for more. We're going to have to ask for more.
Well, that allows you such stability for planning purposes, too.
It does. It does.
Which is great. And plus, you're not spending all the money on PR and marketing every 2 years.
Right. Right. Yeah, and it costs money to put an election up.
Yeah.
And I've talked to him about the ideas is that we would have less elections. But
yeah.
And I think, you know, sometimes you talk about new citizens that move here. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they're afraid that we will become of where they were.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, no, then people operate out of fear. So it's just really a, you know, try to communicate that everybody, we're all working together and we all have a common approach and, you know, education is important. And there is a shift right now in education to really value the career technical education side of things.
Yeah. Which is great. I think that's wonderful.
And, you know, we're really trying to work on some internship programs and get, you know, even with local contractors getting, some of those intro to trade classes going again. Mm-hmm. And so there's a focus on that and really trying to say that a 4-year degree may not be for everybody.
Yeah.
And trying to just get everybody back to that question.
Yeah.
Who are you and how are you going to contribute?
Yeah.
You know.
So as a community, what are some things that the school district could use support in? Let's just take the levy stuff. Let's just set that aside now.
Right.
So how can the community support the education process? Mm-hmm. And you know, I thought about, those really rough couple of years where we had multiple suicides.
Right. Yeah.
And, you just breaks your heart even just thinking about it.
It is.
And, tough. We look at the tenor, the mindset, the attitude of our students, the community that we're in. What can we do to help? You know, you guys are on the ground every day working with students. How can us as just in general as a community help support your efforts with the students?
I think getting students involved, and it goes back to providing opportunities as a community for youth and getting the parents to get kids involved. You know, and I know within a school system we have to have a separation of church and state, but the bottom line is that where is that trusted adult for that child outside of the school system? You know, is it the youth minister? Is it the 4-H leader? Is it the Cub Scout, the Girl Scout, the, you know, those organizations, to me, it's like, having more eyes, more trusted adults, because just the development of growing up is hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the more adults you have just helping guiding you through that, is a positive thing. So I think as a community, how do we get kids more involved in not just school activities, but also activities outside of school.
Yeah.
And because really it's the common goal. And, you know, also that, you know, and if there's things we can do as a school, mm-hmm. you know, some parenting classes, mm-hmm. You know, I know schools have taken on a lot of social issues more so they than have, they ever
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
But again, it's worth it if we can see the returns and helping kids on that social emotional level.
Right.
You know, so so really that social emotional learning is important there. And I think we're have a lot of good programs in place.
Okay.
But really, you know, you mentioned some tough years there, and we did. And, you know, four students that I'm very connected to, you know, completed suicide. And from me, the one thing that has come out of that is there is an increase of students who are breaking the code of silence. And that's a positive thing.
Oh, good.
Sometimes you can't really measure that.
Right.
But just with our school counselors and with their own parents, if they're seeing a friend or somebody who is in need or in trouble, they're reporting it.
Good.
And so we've seen a real increase in that. So
good.
So that's a good a very, you know, one positive thing out of that. So.
Well, I know that Spencer really enjoyed the leadership programs that you guys put in place after those things. Yeah. And good. I'm hopeful that our community will continue to not only come together around these things, but really be thinking forward.
Yeah.
Thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Getting involved before
right.
Things, you know, like that come about, and you can't control it. But,
right.
You know, I really believe that our community is so unique in the way that we support each other
mm-hmm.
when we're in crisis.
Right.
And the way that we have, I mean, anything goes sideways for even a family that moved here recently, people just come out of the woodwork
right.
to really help.
Right.
And so, I was thinking about internships mm-hmm. and different fields. Do you guys have an internship program with local businesses?
It's kind of in its infant stage.
Okay.
You know, there's been it runs through our career technical education program. We run into some obstacles just with the age of kids and what
sure,
they can
of
actually
course.
Do.
Yeah.
But
transportation,
we have partnered with Idaho Forest Group, and so we've had a couple students go out and actually continue in the Millwright program. That's something that we're really trying to expand on to work with students and say when they're ready. Have to define when
right.
they're ready.
Because I think
their junior, senior year, I'm ready to get out there. But, you know, do you not just have the required skills as far as knowledge base to really do an internship, but do you also have the soft skills?
Yeah.
You know, and that level of maturity.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, how do you make the connections,
right?
Like,
right,
you know, because that's great. And I think, you know, we're such a church-heavy community
mm-hmm.
That hopefully, you know, kids are involved in what their parents are doing and
right.
at their local churches, which is great, as well as all the other great activities
right.
That go on here. I think our Parks and Rec department is phenomenal mm-hmm. at providing opportunities. So, we've got a lot of great things going for us.
Right.
So when you know, we're going to shut down our time here.
Yeah.
Is there anything, you know, when you think about communicating something to the community about the school district, what's something you'd want everyone to know about LPOSD?
Think back when you were a child and think about what it was like to be a child. And I think sometimes we forget that.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about even to the teachers, put yourself in your students' position and tell the principals, put yourself in the teacher's position and put myself
little
in
empathy
the,
can
you
go
know,
a long way
I mean
yep.
just to understand everyone's walk of life
mm-hmm.
and you know, so from the community is if there's something that you hear and that gets out there on social media, call me. You know, I always sit down with somebody and talk to them about a situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, social media it can be a very good tool to get information out there, but it can also be a tool that yeah. can spread mistruths. Yeah. And, you know, bottom line is the purpose of our education system is guiding young people to be productive
members of society.
Yep. And that's yep. really, I can't put it any more than
yeah.
that.
Okay.
And
good.
It takes a village.
Right.
And so we do
yeah.
need everybody's support.
Yeah.
And I
yep.
do appreciate that. I all the yeah. time, I there's so many supportive people in this community. As
that's
you said.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
That's great. Tom, I appreciate you coming
absolutely.
In and
thanks
having the
for
conversation.
Inviting me.
You know, of course, the Bonner Breakdown is on Facebook, YouTube, anywhere you can download podcasts.
Yeah.
Check it out. Thanks for watching and thanks for being here with us,
absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
right.
it.
Thank you. Got the mic there.
All right. Okay. Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye.